Today on the 21st Show, it's been 10 years since our program first went on air.
Thanks for listening to our debut.
From founding host Nyla Boodoo to my own tenure, beginning in 2020 onward, we're going to listen back to a decade of the 21st Show, a time span that's included four presidencies and three presidents, two governors, and one endless cascade of world historic events, from war to a global pandemic to a years-long struggle over the meaning of America and democracy. We'll also listen back to some of the most memorable moments from the show that fall outside of the news. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on the 21st Show, which for 10 years has been a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WNIJ in Rockford DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today, we're talking about ourselves. Saturday will mark 10 years to the day since the 21st Show officially went on air.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm your host, Nyla Boodoo. Friday night in Chicago, we saw an example of how bitter...
So today on the program, we're going to mark that decade. Now, as a preliminary matter, I've got to say, I find this kind of thing pretty self-indulgent. I'm not a big believer in adults doing big birthday celebrations. I mean, you know, you do you, but it's not for me. So there are aspects of this kind of episode we're doing today that I find supremely uncomfortable. But then, as I've been ruminating on how to approach this, I had a flash of inspiration, or at least a plausible cover story. It came on a recent visit to Dallas, Texas. Being a history and politics-minded person, I spent the better part of a day at the George W. Bush Presidential Library and Museum. While there, I heard a clip of former First Lady Laura Bush from the museum's dedication. This was back in 2013.
A presidential library is not just about one president. Each library is about our nation and the world during that time.
It's about our nation and the world during that time. I like that. And I think it's also true of talk shows, especially those like ours, which are dedicated to public affairs and culture. They're about our state, our nation, and the world during that time. So today, we mark 10 years of not just the 21st Show, but also 10 years of significant events and upheaval in Illinois, in the United States, and in the world since our first broadcast on March 14th, 2016. All right, let's set the scene. This is Work by Rihanna. Drake comes in later. It was the number one song on the Billboard charts the week of our debut. The President of the United States was Illinois' own Barack Obama. And just a month earlier, he'd returned to Springfield to begin a farewell tour of the nation with a speech to the Illinois General Assembly.
9 years to the day that I first announced for this office, I still believe in that politics of hope. And for all the challenges of a rapidly changing world, and for all the imperfections of our democracy, the capacity to reach across our differences and choose that kind of politics, not a cynical politics, not a politics of fear, but that kind of politics, sustained over the tranquil and steady dedication of a lifetime, that's something that remains entirely up to us. Thank you, Illinois. God bless you. God bless America. It's good to see all of you. I miss you guys. Thank you.
Since we're on the subject of presidential politics, early 2016 was also a time when reality TV star Donald Trump was winning the hearts and votes of Republicans with his unique style of politics.
I have to say this. He hit my hands. Nobody has ever hit my hands. I've never heard of this one. Look at those hands. Are they small hands? And he referred to my hands. If they're small, something else must be small. I guarantee you there's no problem. I guarantee.
Meanwhile, here in Illinois, Governor Bruce Rauner was leading the state through the first year of what came to be known as the budget impasse. He was holding out to weaken the labor unions that represent state workers and teachers. The only problem was that the Democrats, who had majorities in the General Assembly, wanted no part of any of that. And so, state government had been limping along for more than half a year without a legal spending plan.
If each of us commits to serious negotiation based on mutual respect for our co-equal branches of government, there's not a doubt in my mind we can come together to pass a balanced budget alongside reforms. If we work together, Illinois can be both compassionate and competitive.
It would be another 16 months until lawmakers finally agreed to pass a balanced budget without his major reforms. And it's against this backdrop that Illinois Public Media launched a new daytime talk show into the world. It would be called The 21st. Founding host and executive producer Nyla Boodoo explained why in the first episode.
Thanks for listening to our debut of The 21st. We hope today's giving you an idea of what we want to accomplish with the show. We think it's crucial now more than ever for all of us to not just be talking, but listening to each other. Our promise to you is that every time we're on the air, we'll bring you the news, culture, and stories that matter to Illinois. This is your chance to hear voices from all across the state. We want to serve as your connection to the people, places, communities, and most importantly, conversations that are happening here. We're called The 21st, by the way, not just because we're the 21st state, but because we want this to be 21st century radio. So you can always find us online. You can search for The 21st Show on Facebook, follow 21st Show on Twitter, or leave us a voicemail at 217-300-2121. If you can't remember all of that, just remember our website, 21stshow.org. Thanks for talking to us and listening. I'm Nyla Boodoo. This is The 21st.
Nyla would host hundreds of segments and guests over the next 3.5 years, from Illinois' top public officials to people helping little girls learn about science and engineering. In fact, that's the subject of our next clip, which was actually a feature made by Christine Herman. She still occasionally fills in as a guest host on The 21st Show, but she was among the program's earliest producers. Worth noting, Christine is herself a woman of science. She has a PhD in chemistry.
Disney tunes are playing in the background when I walk into the 3D printing lab in the business instructional facility.
That is so awesome. I love that.
Six girls who had signed up for the space theme session are seated at computers along the periphery of the room. In the middle are 12 3D printers, cube-shaped devices not much bigger than a toaster oven, which would be used later in the evening to print out the designs the girls are working on.
My name is Caitlin Deegan, and I'm a sophomore in materials science and engineering.
She's leading today's workshop.
This is Print Your Way to Space. So today we're going to be printing things that have to do with space. So they could come up with anything. Like they could print an alien if they want to, a spaceship, like anything, a planet.
I'm going to design Mars, which is just going to be a sphere with kind of a ridge because there's this valley. I think it starts with an M. I don't really remember, but...
That's 8-year-old Nora. She's pretty into this project. She likes to sit in front of the computer with her legs scrunched up on the chair and her arms wrapped around her knees.
Well, you basically use that design maker thing. I suppose if this is going to be for the radio, people won't see it, but it's like a grid where you can put 3D shapes on it. It's called Tinkercad, and the grid is blue, and the different shapes are different colors. And there's a shape called Paraboloid, which is a very odd name. From here, it kind of looks like a triangle, except with a rounded top. Roundish, pointy.
She doesn't end up using that roundish, pointy shape in her design, but she chose a couple of other shapes to make Mars.
I have just a sphere with a cylinder hole on its side. I might do maybe something on the top and bottom to be like the poles, because it's like a little bump or something. If I can find out how to do that.
One of the volunteers helps Nora get the poles in place. Then they transfer the file to an SD card and bring it over to a 3D printer.
There we go. Make sure it's actually functioning. I don't know what we'll do if it's not, honestly. Oh, yep, it's working.
The printer takes a minute to warm up.
It's going to take quite a while. Why is the time left increasing? It's saying, like, time left 1 hour. That's kind of crazy.
It didn't take an hour to print, maybe like 10 minutes. But when you're 8, that can feel like forever.
But the fact that it takes forever probably implies that it's a really good project, so...
Nora stares through the clear front window of the 3D printer as she watches her design print out layer by layer.
It's done half of the circle so far. It's tiny, but the whole thing had to be tiny, so.
Nora's design is finally complete. It's about the size of a small keychain.
Smells not very good, actually. But it's heated up plastic, so, eh. I don't think that heated up plastic really does ever smell very good.
I asked Nora what she plans on doing with it.
Maybe, like, show it to friends. Like, here's this model of Mars that I 3D printed. By the way, 3D printing is really cool, or something.
The point of Maker Girls is to show girls how science is cool and can be used to help people. Maybe then they'll grow up and want to be a scientist or an engineer or...
So tell her about what you want to be when you grow up.
That's kind of personal.
Yeah. But Nora tells me she does like science and library. As for what Nora wants to be when she grows up, she never did tell me. So we'll just have to wait and see. For the 21st, I'm Christine Herman.
Thanks for that, Christine. Another of the more memorable segments among some of the people who worked with Nyla in those days was when she sat down to a meal with some dear friends at Lee's Chop Suey, a Chinese restaurant in Chicago. Those friends were Louisa Chu, restaurant critic with the Chicago Tribune, and Monica Ang, then of WBEZ and currently with Axios. They both grew up in families that owned and operated Chinese restaurants and had recently written about that experience. We'll first hear from Louisa explaining what makes a restaurant Cantonese.
So my family restaurants were chop suey, Cantonese-style chop suey, which really came around during the same time that these did, you know, late 1960s, 1970s, where they served some of the classic mid-century modern chop suey, chow mein, Hong Kong steak. Also then started to add in, though, pan-fried noodles, because that was actually sort of a more, I should say, late-era Cantonese introduction to Chicago-style Midwestern Chinese restaurants. Mild sauces, it is generally...
Not to be confused with mild sauce on Chicago's south side that you get in places like Harold's. Different.
Completely different. But
Or a tea's coming. And then Lazy Susan is a must. We have a Lazy Susan in the middle of the table.
The Chinese chop suey, which is the barbecue pot mixed with the vegetables.
Wow. Okay.
Thank you. Everyone needs hot tea on a cold night like tonight.
Mmm. Obviously, I was not around during this period of the show's history, other than as a semi-regular guest and later guest host, but some of those who were recall a fairly intense listener reaction to the sounds of eating in that broadcast.
All right, I'm going to try the egg roll first.
What's the verdict?
What's the verdict? It's a good one. I like how the strands of cabbage still have a little bit of crunch in them. Sometimes some of the newer ones are completely really fine cut or almost a paste in the middle. A pretty good fry in these. Really nice distinctive savory tone from the peanut butter, which is noticeable but not too overwhelming.
Incidentally, a supreme sensitivity to sounds, such as other people crunching food, is called misophonia. And we did a segment on that a few years back, too. But I digress. Nyla's time with the show came to be marked by a personal challenge. Less than a year after that debut, Nyla was diagnosed with breast cancer. She sought treatment in Chicagoland, hosting the show remotely from the Northwestern campus in Evanston. She talked about all that on a program later that year.
Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo, and I have to thank a host of people, everyone from Scott Cameron to Brian Moline to Yvonne Greer and Nova Sappho, who've been filling in for me these past few months. This is also not an encore version of the show. This is a live version of the 21st. And for regular listeners, you may have wondered where I've been. In February, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And this summer, I've been undergoing chemotherapy as part of my recovery process. That's why I haven't been on the air as much as I had initially thought I would be. While a diagnosis of breast cancer at my age is not at all common, unfortunately, women getting breast cancer is. One out of every eight women develops breast cancer over the course of their life. As it happens to be Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I would be remiss at this point if I didn't point out the importance of having a mammogram. My tumor was in fact found during the very first mammogram I ever had. I should say to everyone who's listening that I'm going to be okay.
And I'm immensely grateful to all the medical professionals who continue to provide such excellent medical care to me, especially my primary care doctor, who was the one who insisted I first go get that mammogram. And it's because of that great care that I'd like to spend some time today on one issue that I feel like I've learned a lot about in the past 8 months. That's doctor-patient communication. In a few minutes, we're going
to
be...
Nyla continued to host the 21st show for another 2 years after that. And she signed off for the last time on September 25th, 2019.
The idea that it's important for us to talk to each other, no matter what our background, was what motivated me to move to Champaign-Urbana to start the 21st. And from the beginning, we wanted this to be a program that reflected the communities we serve. We wanted to introduce people to each other, to connect people by sharing ideas and stories. To all the people who've shared their stories with us, the stories of their families, the stories about their livelihoods, the stories about their political beliefs, I want to thank you. But it's just as important to thank all of you who were listening. I want to especially thank our audience members at our partner station markets in Springfield, Bloomington Normal, Peoria, Rockford, and of course, Champaign-Urbana. I'm very aware of the fact that you could be listening to or paying attention to many other things and that you choose to tune into the 21st. And that's really important. This is something we usually only say around pledge drive time, which I think is a huge mistake because we should talk often about the importance of people supporting local media all the time. The fabric of not just this country, but this state and all the communities in it are woven by common threads of conversation and trust and of mutual respect. Or to put it simply, how we act when we know each other. But we can't know each other if we don't see each other. And one way we see each other, at least in public radio, is by listening to each other. So it's been my honor and incredible privilege to help put this idea into action through the 21st.
Six months after Nyla departed, the 21st show had a new host. That's coming up after the break. It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey, and this is how the program started on March 30th, 2020. The coronavirus that's causing a global pandemic is continuing to infect people across Illinois. Over the weekend, state officials announced 1,570 new confirmed cases. But as they keep telling us, those numbers are likely artificially low because testing people who think they might have COVID-19 is still so limited. In fact, that was the subject of Governor J.B. Pritzker's daily news conference on Sunday. That was my debut as the full-time host of the 21st show. The first program was broadcast from a makeshift studio in my house. And in fact, that's how I continue to host the show most days. COVID-19 would dominate my first year on the 21st show. Especially in those early months, it seems just about every segment was about COVID and its consequences. As I look back on just the first couple weeks of topics, I see multiple COVID reporter roundtables, how hospitals and nurses were preparing, conversations on essential workers, quarantine gardening and running and other passion projects, mental health for parents suddenly thrust into homeschooling, an innovative ventilator being engineered at the U of I in Urbana, and how Easter and Passover would be marked virtually. And so it went for month after month after month. The year 2020 would also be marked by what came to be known as the racial reckoning, as African Americans George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, and Ahmaud Arbery were all killed without provocation. Arbery, you might remember, was murdered by two white men while jogging through a neighborhood in Georgia. That inspired us to have a program on what some people wryly call running while black. My guests included Kurt Streeter of the New York Times, an avid runner who talked about going through what he called an exhaustive mental checklist every time he laces up.
One of the first things that that goes through my mind is the fear of something happening, like somebody thinking I'm a prowler or I shouldn't be in their neighborhood, calling the police, and then somehow the police coming up on me and and then things going awry from there, as we've seen happen so many times. That's really always been where I run, at least, my biggest fear. I don't necessarily fear, and I don't really go through the checklist of people coming upon me in a truck with shotguns. Yeah. Although I do know that something like that could happen. But really, you know, it's people who fear black males, black people in the neighborhood that I live in Seattle, Washington. First of all, Seattle's one of the whitest cities in America, and I live in predominantly white neighborhood where, a lot of really great folks, but they're not really used to seeing black faces around. So when I'm jogging down the street, and if I've got a hoodie or if I'm dressed in a certain way, I think about all this sort of thing, how I'm seen. Am I going to be seen as a threat? What's going to happen then based on that? So you think about your clothing, you think about things like, slowing down. So let's say, look at homes that are really interesting to me, or somebody's garden, right? I love stuff like that. But I don't tend to stop and look and take in the what's around me, because I don't want to be seen. There's something in the back of my mind about, you know, the fear of being seen as somebody that's looking for an open door or an open window. And I know that's absolutely just crazy to be thinking of, but or to be worried about while I'm out running, supposedly enjoying my time, supposedly relaxing and kind of in my own meditative state, which is really why I run. I think why so many of us run. But the fact that there's just this constant background noise, and sometimes it's small, sometimes it's often just a small kind of voice in the back of your head. And sometimes, you know, as it was after the killing of Ahmaud Arbery, it was really, really, really tough to run in those first few days after that, after looking at that video.
Beyond COVID-19 and the 2020 demonstrations for racial justice, we've covered a wide range of Illinois, national, and global news stories. And when doing the latter, we always tried to make sure we have a 21st state lens on the story. That's what happened when Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died in September 2020. I spoke with David Franklin, a law professor at DePaul in Chicago, a former Solicitor General of Illinois, the state's top appellate lawyer, and most to the point for our conversation, a former clerk to Ruth Bader Ginsburg. He talked about his first impression of her, which came during his job interview on his 30th birthday.
Well, I was told, or maybe warned, ahead of time by many people that I spoke to who had either clerked for her or knew her in some capacity, that she was a very soft-spoken, quiet, rather retiring person. You could hear a little bit of it in the clip that you played just before I came on. She had a way sometimes of pausing for long periods of time right in the middle of a sentence. And so all of my people told me, just don't fill the space. Just wait it out. Let the pause go through, which is, I'm sure, would be dead air on radio.
Believe it or not, that is one of the things they tell us, is let people fill their own silences.
In her own way, she was also very warm and easy to talk to. She didn't really want to talk about deep legal questions on that occasion. You know, she had sort of heard from my recommenders and so forth. And I think at that point, in a job interview, often the potential boss just wants to make sure that you don't have three heads and, you know, that you're a person that they could get along with in the office. And so we made small talk, and it was very pleasant.
Another major story in the past few years has been the Russian war against Ukraine, whose effects reverberated all the way around the world to central Illinois. That's where Marina Teplova was an ISU doctoral student. Her daughter and granddaughter had fled the bombing in eastern Ukraine on a night train.
So a lot of suffering and drama is going on now. And of course, it's impossible not to feel it. I mean, because I feel like as if I'm connected by a thousand invisible threads to everyone in Ukraine, not just my family, but all Ukrainians. I feel this pain. And it's sometimes so much that an anger, of course, anger, because how can you process that? Yes. What do you do to process it? So it's very difficult to, like, you know, to hold yourself together and not to start blaming everyone around you. I understand that the world is helping. They are sending us supplies, but still closing the sky is number one. At least don't let us bomb maternity hospitals and cities, like houses with children, children's houses, orphanages, small villages. They've done so much destruction to children. How many children would die because of the attacks, yeah?
Sadly, there have been other international conflicts in the years that followed, notably when Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, 2023, and Israel responded with a massive years-long bombing campaign in the Gaza Strip. We heard the perspectives of people on both sides of that conflict residing in Illinois. I want to say here, I've been a reporter for more than 20 years now, doing everything from newspaper stories to magazine features and short radio newscast spots. Having the opportunity to host an hour-long show has been a real gift because you can go so much deeper than one usually can in a short daily news item. I hope you'll hear that in these excerpts from a program we did about Israel and Palestine in December of that year, 2023. We begin with Dua Eldesouky, a resident of Champaign and a Palestinian activist. I've listened to a lot of experts, academics, diplomats, people like that, on from a lot of different perspectives, Muslim, Jewish, Israeli, Palestinian, others. A lot of them are pretty hopeless in terms of the prospects for peace. I wonder, as we come to the end of our conversation, where do you find hope?
I find hope in the shift in narrative. And I've been, obviously I am Palestinian, I've been active in terms of Palestinian rights since college. So that's, you know, roughly 15 years now. And I find hope in the shift in narrative. It's, of course, every day I wake up and I read through the news of what happened over the night. And it's frustrating. It's heartbreaking. There are days like yesterday, I felt paralyzed. I felt like I couldn't do anything during the day. But then you kind of, you know, you recalibrate and you hit the ground running again. But that is the number one thing that I personally find hope in right now, the shift in narrative. We're seeing a shift amongst even the mainstream media that has been incredibly pro-Israeli in their voices. They're asking more questions now. They're forcing, you know, they're not taking things at face value the way they used to. We're seeing a little bit of a shift amongst politicians, but what we're really seeing is a shift amongst Americans and people worldwide, right? If you've been following this, you know, the protests worldwide, the movements worldwide, the boycotts worldwide. And so that's where I take hope from, that this shift will lead to Palestinian liberation.
That same show, we also spoke with two Israeli students at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, a married couple, Yarden and Stav Asher. You know, and I hear certainly what you're saying. I think there are a lot of people who say, though, look at the disproportionate now number of Palestinian civilians, children in many cases, thousands of children who have been killed there, and say, couldn't Israel find some other way? And I know it's not entirely fair to ask you to sort of solve what is an incredibly difficult foreign policy situation, but I wonder, do you feel sympathy for the Palestinians in Gaza who are not part of Hamas?
So yeah. Much.
Yes, yes. I think these are really important questions, and I think it is really important to say that we feel horrible for Palestinians in Gaza, for civilians there that are living in a horrific situation, truly. I can't imagine what they're going through, and I feel that the situation is just as worse as it can be. And so many people are dying, and the damage is immense. It's just that, as I said before, I think for Palestinians, having Hamas there is the main issue. It's Hamas, you know, who's using them as human shields, who's taking all of the donation money and using it for combat, who's trying to do everything they can to destroy Israel. And so when Israel retaliates and they're doing everything they can to truly, you know, target specifically terrorists and not civilians, I truly don't know what else we can do.
Yeah, we'll definitely feel the pain of the civilians in Gaza. And I want to just assure everyone who's listening that Israelis understand that we are fighting against Hamas, not against the Palestinian people. We do not wish harm upon anyone who is not a part of the terrorist organizations. We mourn the loss of life. It's just that, as we've discussed before, you asked, I mean, what can we do? We can't just let a terrorist organization kill and rape and murder people, you know, every now and again, fire rockets indiscriminately into dense population regions in Israel. So at some point, we can no longer accept it, but definitely the fact that Hamas is using the people in Gaza as human shields, fighting from hospitals, from schools, it's abhorrent. It's horrible, and the things that Israel does, I mean, it's believe me, it's not because we think that we are against the Palestinian people. We don't think of them as the enemy. The Palestinians are not our enemy. Hamas is.
Before we go to a break, I have to mention what has been the other major through line in the years I've been hosting the 21st show, and that is the threat to American democracy posed by people who seem to have a very different understanding of what those words mean. On no day was that made as clear to me as when a mob of Donald Trump's supporters violently broke into the U.S. Capitol building with the goal of disrupting the ceremonial certification of the 2020 election. We always say that public radio is at its best when it talks not to or about people, but with them. And to that end, we work hard to include your voices on the show. Here's a sampling of some of the way our fellow Illinoisans were processing what had happened after January 6th, 2021.
This is Wendy calling from Rock City, Illinois.
Hi, this is Jane from Champaign.
Hi, my name is Laura. I'm calling from Rockford, Illinois.
Ron, Hearst, Illinois.
I am so embarrassed by the way these radicals behaved and overtook our Capitol building. This insurrection, to me, is unconscionable. Also, I think Trump needs to be removed.
I think the 25th Amendment route is the only real way to go. We can't, in good conscience, do a reasonable job of impeachment in less than 2 weeks, but we can temporarily suspend the president's duties with the 25th Amendment.
The more and more I'm processing what happened last Wednesday, I not only feel that the president should be impeached, but I also feel that the senators that supported to reject the electoral vote and the representatives should be censured by Congress.
Thank God Trump was voted out of office. He was unfit run in any public office. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who called in that day and every day and responds to our text messages and sends us emails and leaves us voicemails. This show would not be what it is without your active participation. On that note, I did pre-record today's program, so we are not taking calls live, but let me talk about some of the ways you can get in touch with us. Our voicemail line, you heard some of the messages there, 217-300-2121. That's 217-300-2121. You can also join our texting group by sending the word TALK to 217-803-0730. Again, you text the word TALK, T-A-L-K, to 217-803-0730. We have an email address, talk@21stshow.org. And if you can't remember all that, I don't blame you. You can just go to our website, 21stshow.org. That's 21stshow.org. All the ways to contact us are there. When we come back, the lighter side of the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Today we're marking a decade of the program. We first went on air 10 years ago tomorrow, March 14th, 2016. So far, we've heard about the first 4 years of the program, led by founding host Nyla Boodoo. Then we listened back to how we've covered some of the major events of our time, from COVID-19 to the January 6th insurrection. But the 21st Show is not all vegetables. We try to offer a balanced diet that also includes segments on history and culture and arts and food and books and science. The producers and I spend a lot of time preparing for our conversations, doing detailed research, reading articles by and about our guests, listening to other interviews they've done. But sometimes, despite our best efforts, guests can surprise us. And that was certainly the case in 2022 when I spoke with Edgar Lehr, who's the Robert Harrington Endowed Professor of Biology at Illinois Wesleyan University. He'd recently been in Peru, where, working in collaboration with some local scientists, they discovered a previously unknown species of lizard in the Andes Mountains. But fascinating as that was, it turns out not to be the most interesting part of our conversation. All right, so you're recently named, I didn't mention this, but a 2022-23 Fulbright Scholar to Peru. Can you briefly remind our listeners what the Fulbright program is about and what are the goals for your project?
Yeah, first I should say something that I've not mentioned before. The Otichen National Park is in the Cocaine Valley of Peru. Yeah, so it's a very dangerous area where narco-traffickers are active. And we got contact with those people. So to make it short, we had to be rescued by special forces with the military helicopter flown out a week earlier.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they were approaching us. So with this in mind, the narco traffickers, the drug cartel knows my name. They were using drones to spy on us. And at the Illinois Wesleyan banner, and I'm the only one doing research in Peru. And they followed even after we got rescued us out of the military airbase. So I have obviously security reasons to return to Peru for Fulbright because we interfered with narco trafficking activities, probably they lost money as a result of this. So I contacted Fulbright and asked them to switch the host country. So I'm going to a different country out of the drug area.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? If you have a minute, we need to take a break on the show. We're on a fixed clock, but I'd like to ask you more about that. So if you can just hang on for a minute, we are speaking with Professor Edgar Lehr from Illinois Wesleyan University, the Robert Harrington Professor. So that's a conversation we thought would be one way, and then it turned out to be another. We also thought it would be one length, and so we pivoted to extend it out to hear more about the cartels. By the way, if you want to hear any of the programs mentioned today, we're going to have links to all of them at our website, 21stshow.org. Professor Lehr's experience being pursued through a Peruvian jungle by drug cartels and rescued by a special forces helicopter is one way a show can have unexpected elements. Another is when there's unexpected friction between guests, though perhaps some of that should have been anticipated. Such was the case in 2022, when there had been some reported Bigfoot sightings in Illinois. Some of the producers thought it would be fun to have on a cryptozoologist, so they booked Matt Moneymaker, president of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, and a cast member of Animal Planet's Finding Bigfoot. But I like to think of myself as more of an enlightenment man, so I saw to it we booked an actual zoologist. Actually, a primatologist, Paul Garber. Paul Garber, emeritus professor at the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign. Things got a bit heated, at least by our usual standards.
All living great apes, chimps, bonobos, orangutans, gorillas, they build nests every night to sleep. So we would expect if it was an ape, all apes are diurnal, they're not nocturnal. Not all apes, but all but orangutans live in groups, that we would expect to see evidence or remains of nests, for example, or evidence of tool use, as some apes do, or large skeletons. Something like a gorilla, for example, consumes about 60 pounds of food a day. And so there should be evidence of those remains if we're talking about a large-bodied primate.
Well, Matt, and unfortunately, our time is short for this conversation. So, Matt, let me ask you, what sort of evidence do you look for when you're out in the field looking to substantiate claims?
When we're out in the field, I mean, if we don't have a lot of time out there, we're trying to get them to respond to vocalizations that they make that don't match any other type. And I should say, just briefly, to rebut what you're saying, Dr. Garber, if you have all the apes you're talking about are tropical species. So you're not accounting for the possibility, like with humans, that they might have adapted to a more northern climate and maybe became more carnivorous, and so didn't live like the tropical apes that are herbivorous primarily, and became more predatory and could have become, because they're predatory, could have become more nocturnal, which is what these things are. So they adapted to a different lifestyle, different kind of nutrients, not foraging in groups, but really kind of roaming around like kind of omnivorous predators, and very much like ancient humans. And they could have evolved that direction. And I think the future point, you'll see that that's what actually happened.
I guess all I could say is there's no evidence. You're telling a story, and there's no physical evidence or scientific evidence right now to support your story. There's only one species.
So wrong about that.
Okay,
there is so much evidence.
I'm gonna break in here to say I'm sorry. I did not hope this would become sort of a debate. I mean, I think beyond science and history and politics, we also like to explore the arts and culture of Illinois. From time to time, we've brought Illinois musicians into our studios to share their work. One Central Illinois group that's been on twice so far is Emily the Band, in this case represented by two of its members, Emily Antonacci and Cameron Proctor. Emily, Cameron, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us. We're so excited to be here.
So as I said, we're set up in the Collins studio. So maybe we can just start with one of your songs. This is going to be called Ace of Spades. Just tell us a little bit about what we're going to hear.
Yeah, so one time I read online, and I can't remember where, that an ace of spades represents a new beginning. And I wrote a song about how I became friends with an ex-partner after 3 years of ghosting them.
Oh, wow.
And then I put it on a record. That's what we do, baby. You want to hear it?
I want to hear it. Let's hear it.
All right. Want to count us in?
Just like magic, I shove my words like scarves inside my pockets. I left them there in hope that you forgot them. But now they're coming out. Cause I'm the worst illusionist. I snapped my wand and used it as a matchstick. Set fire to my telephone line and played dead. I've got to put it out. Cause I'm one for showing all my cards. My poker face is cellophane, but looks like I'm not the only when you're handing me your ace of spades. You're handing me your ace of spades for my next trick. I'll shove the last 3 years into 10 minutes and try to get the truth about how you've been. I wish you'd spit it out. 'cause I'm one for showing all my cards. My poker face is cellophane, but looks like I'm not the only one. When you're handing me your ace of spades, you're handing me your ace of spades. Begin again. Is it too late to show my hand? Begin again. I know now why I loved you then. I'm one for showing all my cards. My poker face is cellophane, but looks like I'm not the only one. When you're handing me your ace of spades, you're handing me your ace of spades.
What fun that was, having musicians in the studio. We also like to get out of our studios from time to time, touring museum exhibits, going to major events like the State Fair and the Republican and Democratic political conventions, which our producers attended in 2024, and just going wherever our fellow Illinoisans are gathering. That was the plan in October 2023, when we went to the Quad Cities for Mercado on Fifth's annual Dia de los Muertes, Day of the Dead celebration. Here we'll hear from one of the musicians, translated by producer Jose Zepeda.
Mi nombre es Arnulfo Montejano, aquí del Mariachi Campiranos de Peoria, Illinois, un servidor.
My name is Arnulfo Montejano, and I'm with the Mariachi Campiranos from Peoria, Illinois. We've been coming to the Quad Cities for the past 13 years, participating at the Mercado on 5th. And in that time, we've met so many people, and it's been an honor to come here and participate in this event, especially with the community here growing. There's been just a lot more unity among Hispanic and Latinos in both Illinois and in Iowa. Here is just like the frontier at home. Again, it's great that they are doing this, and it's an honor to be here.
That is all the time we have for the 21st show today, this week, and for our first decade. We'll be back at it on Monday, but before we go, I would be remiss if I did not acknowledge that while Nyla Boodoo and I have the privilege of being the voices of the 21st show, we've only been able to do that because of the many, many producers and other colleagues who work with us in making the program what it is. When I knew our anniversary was coming up, I set out to make a list of everyone who's worked on the show over the years. This is as comprehensive as I can get it. Sincere apologies if I'm leaving anyone off. Please get in touch and let me know. That said, the 21st show has been produced by Tiffany Jolly, Amanda Honingfort, Christine Herman, Sean Newman, Philip Kisubica, Travis Stansel, Robert Holly, Robin Lynn, Julian Haida, Ellen Montesilio, Libby Foster, Eunice Alpesan, Anna Casey, Ryan Wild, Chantal Vaca, Erica Scalise, Aiden Choate, Kennedy Vincent, Harrison Melkin, and to this day, Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our digital producers have been Damian Contreras, Stephanie Mosqueda, and today, Kulsum Khan. Our past interns have been Abrar Alhiti, Haula Dilahi, Zainab Qureshi, Brielle Skullark, Owen Henderson, Nick Boyven, Anaya Jones, and Leili Nazarova. Technical direction and engineering is provided by Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Our news directors have been Scott Cameron and still Reginald Hardwick. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media For Nyla Boodoo, I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again next week.